Here we go.
And gentlemen, welcome back to the Vital Villa podcast. And thank you so much for the reception for the first episode where I was joined by PGR Analytics. And we've really tried to pinpoint Villa's strengths and weaknesses within the current first team squad and use analytics, facts and stats to really highlight these strengths and weaknesses to really evaluate the season just gone and where we could potentially go for the 2021-22 campaign in the Premier League. And I know we've just talked about current first team affairs, but throughout lockdown and throughout the past year and a bit, my perspective on football has really changed. And through that conversation, I really felt that I've started to really gain deeper meanings and understand deeper meanings behind the sport that we love, which is football. And throughout lockdown, I held numerous conversations with various high profile people within the AVFC community about their life stories and about their perspectives on Aston Villa, because that's what I'm really interested in, because there's numerous sources that you can get online nowadays that report AVFC news, that report latest transfer rumours, etc. And I really wanted to delve deeper into people's life stories and delve deeper into why they hold certain viewpoints about certain things that are so significant for us Aston Villa fans, not just in the UK, but around the world. So I wanted to discuss the grand stadium that is Villa Park. And one man I really want to discuss it with was a Birmingham Mail journalist, a presenter for the Claret and Blue podcast, James Rushton. And we discussed Villa Park and we discussed our first experiences at B6, the deeper meanings behind an AVFC match day, as well as the famous Hole 10, which once again, the Hole 10 holds such a significant place within all Aston Villa fans' heart, despite being potentially in the UK or around the world. Even if you've never been to it, just seeing it online and seeing people's videos of them being in there, it's such a magnificent place. And I really got to feel that when I went to Villa Chelsea last season, when fans were just allowed back into stadiums. So here we go then. This is my conversation with James Rushton about all things Villa Park and really unlocking our deeper meanings and deeper feelings for the grand stadium that the boys of Claret and Blue play in. So I really hope you enjoy it. And the thing we've all been missing during lockdown is our experiences at Villa Park and all football stadiums around the country and for some around the world. So I just wanted to get your viewpoint on a simple question, but a question that could be interpreted in any way possible, really. And that's just, what does Villa Park mean to you?
It's like a second home, isn't it? I didn't appreciate it as much as I do now when I was younger. My first match I went to that I can remember was against Southampton. Might have been 2002 odd, 2001. And I remember it's been in the family zone next to the old away end in the north stand. So they had that whole little row to themselves. I remember how rapturous they were when they got a penalty and scored. And, you know, the explosion, their song, the Villa songs, the Southampton songs were really effective. Villa were a bit quiet. They were a bit hurt by the game. You know, sometimes the game gets away from them. And the fans aren't really being entertained. So they're not really there in full voice. What got me was the away fans and, you know, the passion there. And I remember getting my first season ticket not too long after. And it was in the Doug Ellis Whitten Lane stand. And you're looking at the whole end. And you might not be in that all standing or singing section, but you can appreciate the vast scale of a whole end just descending. The noise literally descends from the top down. So being there and able to see that before moving over and standing there was incredible. I wouldn't have had it any other way, mind you. I'd have loved to have been one of those kids that was born, you know, pretty much in the back of the terrace and standing there all the time. But being outside of that, as a kid, sitting with someone in the Doug Ellis stand and appreciation what the whole end brought, gave me, you know, a lot of gratefulness when it was my turn to stand at the back of K5 and start singing. So the whole end is like a second home. It's a place of peace. Win, lose or draw, it's a place of peace and, you know, pure enjoyment. You know, you feel safe there. You feel in a community there. You feel like, you know, hopefully no one's judging you. And again, it goes back to your boycotts and stuff. But, you know, if I feel like that, I want everyone there, the players to feel like that. You know what I mean? So Villa Park's like a home. I know it's a cliche, but it's nice. It's familiar. And the fact it looks so good is, and it's such a great place to be, is you know, only second to that.
And you see news corporations and just football fans as individuals talk about the great talents like Ronaldo and Messi and Suarez and Griezmann. And there's all these fantastic players that come under the name that is football. But the thing that attracts football fans back to games and what causes this passionate fan bases to emerge is the tribalism within football. And that can go too far, but the fact that you have a conflict of interest and there's that banter, and in all, it has to be in a measured proportion, and it can't go too far like we've seen in certain years, and that's why things like the social media boycott have happened. But in under control, the banter and the contrast of interests and just that whole thing surrounding football and the rivalry is what we all love football and make those experiences so special.
Yeah, you know, it's being part of a larger family, an extended family. It's, you know, you wouldn't swap those things for the world. And it's like, I don't know about you, and I know it is another cliche, but lockdown football has been tough. Like at the start, it was, you know, a novelty of how terrible the world was, and probably in some places still is. You know, I might be being a bit naive there, but lockdown football just doesn't have the same impact for me. Not anymore. You know, you look, it's like empty calories. You look at it and you consume it and it goes through, and you're like, you've never felt less of a fan. You've never felt more of a customer. You're only getting it if you can pay for it. And I know you've got to buy your season tickets, but the feeling of buying a ticket to go down to Villa feels a lot different to buying, you know, renewing your BT Sports package.
Yes.
So, you know, it has been tough. You know, I probably underappreciated it. Before, because you know, when you're going down and you're watching the other way match on TV, then you go back down Villa Park and then you go away to like Hillsborough or whatever. That was one thing, but now it's a different thing. Now you know you can't touch that home game. You know you can't go to that away game. You don't even have the option. It's different, and it has affected the way I view and watch football. It's not the same, and I know people would think watch and go, well, it is, but. You know, if you know, you know, don't you?
I touched on this in a piece of writing I did quite a while back.
Yeah.
Villa Park's a place of, as weird as it sounds, like you said, peace and tranquility. And the abrupt nature of the COVID pandemic and the fact that normality for everyone's just been chucked out the window and we've had to adapt to like these new surroundings has been hard for people. You said it's been hard for you, it's been hard for me, it's been hard for many, many people in different circumstances. But just within the context of football, I completely agree. Like, I watch games now when Villa beat Everton and when El Ghazi scored that absolute screamer. Normally, in a stadium, would have gone mad, but I was like, oh, I didn't necessarily react in the same way I would have done when normality was in place.
No, and that's the cruelest thing, because I'm usually someone who reacts quite violently to a goal or red card or whatever. And I've noticed in myself that the celebrations just get muted and it's just. It's just something you're watching rather than being involved in. And I don't want to get used to that. I don't, you know, watching it on TV was fine. And I know there's a lot of like overseas fans and that's the only way they can interact with it. And that's not to dilute their experience. But once I think, because there's no fans there at all, even watching on TV is taking such a hit, because when you used to watch on TV, you'd still have all the ambient, you'd have the atmosphere and the energy. And that isn't really there. It's really hard to judge the momentum and the ebb and flow of games when there's no noise and there's no energy there. You know, you imagine the crowd roaring Villa on at Goodison Park, that away crowd. Like, it, maybe it's not the game changer everyone makes it out to be, but it would have felt like that. You know what I mean? It would have, the feel of football is a very real thing. And a lot of people kind of look down on that. And I'm a massive believer in the, you know, the, almost the phantom of football and how that atmosphere kind of gets involved in on the pitch. And even if you're not infecting a game, the fact that you're screaming at the ref or moaning about something, it makes you, you know, you feel like you're playing Football Manager and you've just made a sub and you're the one who has caused all that. You know, you shout it in. Whomever you are, you shouting at the pitch has caused the action to happen. You can't get that, you know. I know you can get it at home. Look, if you're watching the FA Cup final, the World Cup final, watching England, you know, you get into it. But the more that there's no one there at the games in the first place, it makes it a harder kind of bargain for you.
and you talked about being passionately engrossed within the world that is football. And as a Villa fan, it may have been different for you, but for me, it took a while to necessarily get into the football and be fully submerged into being a Aston Villa fan and watching game after game and going to game after game. But for you, was it just that first game where you were instantly hooked, or did it take you time to then fully become engrossed in it?
No, my kind of upbringing with football is a bit weird because, like, we couldn't afford, like, the Sky Sports and stuff. Couldn't afford to go to matches. So Aston Villa was just a thing that, you know, I don't know if you admitted to it, but it existed on my, like, chipped PS1. You know what I mean? I don't even think they were on one of the games. I think it was World Cup 2000, so they weren't even on it, mate. But World Cup 2002, Japan and South Korea. They weren't even on that. You know, you had to play, you know, you had to, I think Steve Staunton was on the Republic of Ireland, and there weren't many other villains knocking about. Alpi, maybe. Malberg and Alpi, a few others. But some of them weren't even in the squads, and there was no, like, patches like you get these days, and it's like you had to just deal with what you got. So my experience with Villa was just, like, I just got it from my dad and my granddad and the stories they would tell. And, you know, they'd come back from the pub watching the game and tell you about it. The newspaper was massive. Like, hoping we'd be the back page on the Mirror or the Birmingham Mail. And obviously we would be on the Birmingham Mail, but not necessarily the Mirror, mate. We were pretty poor at the time. But yeah, going to see Southampton, getting the season ticket and just going all in with it was brilliant. I think, it was just something that was always there. And then when you latched on, you're like, wow, you know, I'm in there. And, you know, you're not taking me out of it.
Do you look forward when you return back to Villa Park to attend there by yourself? Or do you look forward to not necessarily attending Villa Park match days by yourself, but with your family? How do you normally like to participate in a Villa Park match day?
I'll go with my dad and my two brothers, Ryan and Charlie. And, you know, Charlie was kind of late to the season ticket game. So at first it was me and my dad. At first, actually, my dad did he's the toiler, actually, and he did a job for a family friend, and his payment was, can you buy James a season ticket with you?
Uh-oh.
And that was my first one. That was in the Martin O'Neill days and just before, and my second season ticket. So I went for 3 or 4 years. We split a season ticket between us kids with that. And when I got my first job, I couldn't even afford it, but what I did was this was the year before Tim Sherwood took charge, so probably one of the last days of Paul Lambert. I'm really unclear on these seasons at the moment, but I got my first kind of full job after uni. Couldn't really afford a season ticket, but I bought one anyway. And that was it. Me and my dad went down, then Ryan, my brother, moved down with us, and then we got Charlie aboard, so we've got 4 seats in the whole end now. And yeah, it was just I get picked up or I get the train. Sometimes I meet my mate Stevie Green in town. We'll walk from Scruffy Murphy's in Birmingham, where he likes to, you know, hang out, and go down, walk all the way to Aston with a sausage roll in hand, a coffee in hand. Or my dad will pick me up from mine and drive us down to the game. Or I get a train, walk into Sutton, get the train down. It doesn't matter. We're always getting there. Sometimes by the skin of our teeth as well. Sometimes we have to rush in, and that walk from I think where we park used to be the old pub on where Birmingham City University used to be. We used to park by that pub on the campus and walk in, and sometimes that walk would be deadly if you're late, man. Like, it's too late. But yeah, it's a mixed bag. I never experienced a match playing the same way. It's like, there is genuinely a different journey every time. There's very little in the way of ritual, because when I get a lift, it's always like, do you want a lift at the last minute? Yeah, I do want a lift. All right, stuck in traffic. Oh no, this time I want to go in with Stevie. It's different each time, but always have to get him a Bulmers. That's the only thing that stays the same, is I'm made to buy a round every time. It's just my round all the time.
Yeah. And you talk about the unexpected nature of match days as well, and how you talk about you go with your friends, your family, maybe yourself as a journalist. But the one thing we've missed on the whole is socialising with people. So how much are you looking forward to, whether it's with your family or your friends, just being part of a Villa Park match day and being fully engrossed with it and surrounded by like-minded people in terms of Aston Villa?
Well, I can't wait, man, because when you're around with people, it takes a lot of the stress of trying to do all the work in your head yourself to kind of process the game. I mean, everyone's like that when you're watching the match and you hear the show. You either disagree or agree with it. You know what I mean? You're trying to calculate everything in your head. When I've been at the Villa this season, so I had the privilege, to go to one of these matches. Two of them, sorry, Villa versus West Brom away at the Hawthorns and Villa versus Burnley at home. Brilliant because you are a Villa fan and you're watching Villa play. Awful because no one's there. Is it really a football match if no one's there? Or it's like, there's a bear crap in the woods if no one's around. But it was happening. You have to work on it. But the energy isn't there. And you have to do all the work yourself. And you're not getting anything from the crowd. You're only getting what you can see. And if you look away and you look back and something's happened, have you messed up the player ratings then? And it is a dream job, don't get me wrong. I'm not like moaning about it, but it is hard when the fans in there because you don't have the energy, you don't have anything to feed off by what's happening in front of you. And if you do this thing, what many football fans do, and just doze off for a second, the game's gone. Like it's gone ahead of you. There's very few replays at some stadiums. So everyone, even from the journalists to the players to the fans themselves, needs fans there to do the work of digesting football form for each other. We need the energy.
But I know it's a generic question, but I think it's important in terms of really looking deep into different people's upbringings in regards to Villa Park match days. What was your favourite match that you participated in at Villa Park as a supporter, maybe as a journalist on the odd occasion? What was your favourite match at Villa Park?
It's been as a supporter, and it was was this the Blues 4-2? Was it the Blues 4-2?
Okay.
I think it was. I'm trying to think. The 4-2 was in the promotion season, wasn't it? When we beat them at home, yeah. I thought it might have been the one from the year before, but it was at the 4-2 because the atmosphere was electric. If this is the one I wanted, they scored first as well, and it was edgy. Like I felt sick, and I've never felt like that at a football. I felt genuinely sick to my stomach, and I thought we are gonna lose, aren't we? We're gonna lose the Blues at home. And I felt everyone felt that way. You could feel it. You could feel the anxiety and then the relief. Like that's the best thing is the goal that you know is coming, but you also know it's not coming. But it's so it comes as almost like when it hits that goal, almost like a surprise, but not a surprise. It's like best of everything. It's like you knew it was coming, so you're relieved. But it's also a surprise for you. You're extremely ecstatic. But my dad, he was celebrating and he had his vape in his hand because he takes it out of his pocket when there's a goal. And he was just celebrating with that. And the stewards pulled him down. And
Hey, what?
What? He was gonna get chucked, like he was gonna get fully chucked. And actually, really, the police actually intervened and just said, "Just leave it, let him back." And he come back up. And then another goal went in, and he went absolutely mad, and he's completely backwards. It's always to be fair, most of the best memories I have are my dad's celebrations. So the year we made the playoff final against Fulham. We played Cardiff, didn't we? And it was a really tense game. It was like nil-nil for ages, and Grealish scores that volley. He's had a bet, and it must have been, I think, 50-1 or 25-1 odds of Grealish scoring the winner. And mate, when he scored that, all I saw lot to the left of me is this betting slip in the air. So yeah, it's usually my dad's celebrations, to be fair, because it comes like this of nut. He used to do Albert Adonis dance as well, like or try to like. Like, yeah, honestly, it does make it, and you're hugging your brothers, going mad, love it. Like, and most goals, to be fair, at Villa, my dad's anything, I've got a lot, it's all coming out now, but yeah, it's got to be the Blues match or the Cardiff match because it was just the context behind the goal. My dad coming back up after almost having his season ticket took off him, it was brilliant.
Were you there for the, was it the West Brom game, the season we went up and beat Derby in the final? Were you there for it was the first leg?
So that was good as well. But I think Harahan's goal brilliant. But that was another everyone in the air. That dad's got his vape in the air. That's another moment. But I think it was the fact there was a second leg. that was the killer. But when Dwight Gow went off as well, it was like good moment. That it's like WWE, like all the crowd getting involved, brilliant. Loved it. They're all like mocking him.
I think as well, one moment we have shared and what position we have shared is in regards to the Villa View, the post-match reaction content and the fan cams. And we've been able to talk to people outside of the grounds and get like immediate thoughts. And like we've said, and I've continued to say online, and what we've said here is that fans are the beating heart of a football club. And just to see their reactions and gain their reactions and speak to them as fans is an interesting yet insightful process to go through. So I think you've done a few and you spoke to me outside the ground. What's been some of your favourite times to come out of Villa Park and just see the atmosphere and the fans' delight?
This isn't delight, but and this is actually opposite. Who's going in? It was Villa versus Newcastle when we got relegated, and the I think it was a protest against Randy Lerner. That was electric, and I know I say the atmosphere and the energy is usually electric. Genuinely never felt something like that in my life. It's just that was a movement and something really, I don't know if it's positive to be involved in with, but you know, it was what fans at the time wanted, and how joined in unison at the way the football club was being run, or you know, the direction it was at least the direction it was going in. Something like that was, you know, enormous. And I know the fan reaction after is so important, but the fan reaction going in, just as important on the odd occasion. Usually it's nervous, usually it's calm. You know, usually there's that little tinge of anxiety running through. But that one was different. That one really stood out. I remember just being in that mob of people and the flares. And I wish there was a way to get that energy every game. You know, like almost that like ultra European energy. The flares, I love it. The tifos and that. I do wish there was a way that press group could have carried on into like a support group and bought banners and all. So I know there's the Project Basics, but I wish there was just more of that, more energy, more excitement, more money in these fan activities. That stood out massively.
And the whole experience that we go through as Villa fans, and that experience of in the Premier League trying to beat the best in Man City, Liverpool, Man United, and that was nearly taken away from us with the European Super League. So I know you may have discussed this with Clout and Blue or just discussed this with your family, friends, etc. But how important of a moment was it for football fans, Chelsea, Arsenal, Man United alike to come forward and just like the Villa fans did against Lerner and protest against that? How important was it for the football community as a whole just to get together and support the idea of scrapping the European Super League?
It's incredibly important. You know, people need to be listened to, and it's not just football stuff. It's like everything. If you're unhappy, you need to make your voice heard. The Glazer stuff on the weekend, you know, people like saying, oh, well, God, what are they doing? It's like, you know, protest isn't meant to be comfortable for the people you're protesting against. And, you know, we're not here to like condone violence or something, but these things happen when people are annoyed. It's whether it's something because quote-unquote trivial as football or something else, people protest when they're angry and upset. And the way some football clubs are run, you know, Manchester United have had a massive, brilliant history even recently. I know they haven't done as well as the Ferguson years, but they've still done relatively well. But there's an underlying tinge of what happens when these guys leave. Is our football club actually safe? Is it how much debt is floated on this thing? And it just goes to the Super League idea of these football clubs spending, you know, massively without outside of their means, and the people have to pick up that bill, maybe not financially, but emotionally, are the fans. You know, worst case scenario, what if a club like Juventus were good to exist? I mean, I'll be happy because I'm, you know, I've supported AC Milan, so I'll be buzzing and no more challenges for the Scudetto, get in there. But, you know, there are fans of that club, they're proud fans of that club, they deserve that club existing in their community. So whilst it might be a good laugh of banter, these football clubs genuinely, you know, that they saw the Super League as a big money grab that they had the right to go in. They didn't think about it. It was, you know, absolutely naive of them, but that's what these people are. You know, you don't, some of the people in charge of football clubs are not qualified to be there. You know, if you ever feel unqualified in your life or an imposter in your role, I tell you what, there's some of these, you know, Perez at Real Madrid is a bit of a clown, isn't he? So, yeah. You know, he isn't represented very well. But I'm just glad fans got heard. You know, it's a shame that certain things have occurred and happened. It happens, doesn't it? It's, you know, when there's friction, there's going to be these type of situations, and footballers caused friction for absolutely no reason, rather than wrong people making a lot of money off the back of fans that are angry. But every right to be so, in my opinion.
I mean, this is the thing as well. Football means such a large amount to local communities, and the work that Villa have done with the local communities and with organisations like the ABFC Foundation have really helped to positively shape Aston Villa, specifically under the Wes and Nassef ownership. So what are your thoughts on organisations like the ABFC Foundation and what they do for Villa, Villa Park, and just Aston Villa as an entity as a whole?
Prior to the club, you know, you whenever you see the work that they've done, or even the work the footballers do off the back of the foundation stuff, you know, it makes you proud, because look, if a football club didn't have something like that, it doesn't need to have like a foundation to do it. But if it didn't do the community work, the hard work, the actual hard work, may as well not exist. You know, if Villa didn't do anything like that, what's the point? What's the point of being Aston Villa if you're not representing Aston, if you're not investing in the area? Not necessarily with money, but investing your time in there. And the Villa Foundation do that. Makes me, you know, one of the things I'm always proud to see, regardless of how the club is performing, is how the Villa Foundation are doing. And, you know, people like Kerry Lenahan, who raise a lot of money with the Villa name, you know, attached to the work she does in the Villa community. People like that are amazing.
Where do you think you'd be now as an individual without Aston Villa Football Club? Because you wrote for 7500 to Holt, and that helped you get into your career as a journalist. You now work for Birmingham Mail. You're part of the Clout and Blue podcast, and that's your profession at the moment. And I'm sure that life would be completely different without sport in your life. So where do you think Aston Villa, where would you think you would be without Aston Villa?
Probably have to do it for West Brom, mate.
Oh, wow. You're going there.
My granddad supported West Brom, so if they were the club, I'd have to do that, wouldn't I? But I don't know, honestly. Don't know. I used to work in radio, so it might have been that. But genuinely, right, Villa, I don't know. Actually, it's pretty scary to think how much of your life is tied into this football club.
There's been so many moments as well where just experiencing games at Villa Park have helped to shape me as an individual, because we talked about the element of socialising with people and meeting old, new, just people of all different ages, religions, cultures. Because I grew up in a small little village and we were restricted to like 50 people, and it's abandoned at times, but there isn't that element of socialising on like a massive scale. And going to places like Villa Park has really helped me to develop as an individual. And I just wondered if that was the case for you.
Yeah, I think so. I still am very conscious of how I come across, and, you know, all sorts of mad rubbish that I could talk your ear off it for about ages about how conscious I'm of things, self-conscious. But I used to never sing. I'd be embarrassed. I used to, like, when you're in the crowd, if I'm chanting. I always thought when I was sitting in the dugout as a kid, I couldn't do that. I couldn't stand up and scream and shout, but I can. And that's one of the many, many things that going to Villa taught me, is that, you know, you just be yourself. You know, you've seen some of the clobbers some of the geezers wore in the 70s down there. Definitely be yourself, man, down the Villa.
It's a confidence thing as well, and you emphasise that there. Like, I was a shy, timid kid, and I used to go to primary school and be worried and just hate the experience. But going down to high school, I've grown, I've become a better person, more confident. And that's aligned with my experiences at Villa Park.
No, absolutely. I guess that's the same for any kind of subcultures. Once you find it and you get involved, it builds you. It builds you as a person. And, you know, we don't necessarily owe Villa for that. We owe our football community for that, wherever it might be. Even, you know, Blues fans owe it to Blues. Baggies fans owe it to Baggies. Warsaw, Burton. You know, it's all one and the same. But we've got our own little unique thing that makes us a little bit different in each club. And I'd like to think that Villa's is a positive one. They're rubbed off on us all.
Yeah, and it's important to really balance the historic elements of Villa whilst implementing like modern elements to it. And I think there's been some talk in terms of expanding Villa Park and expanding the area surrounding it. How do you think NAS7 Wears and the people behind that should really go about keeping those core values that we've grown to love with Aston Villa?
Honestly, man, the easy sense is build whatever you're building, build it out of those red bricks. Keep the mosaics, you know, don't make Villa identity. If it has to happen, it has to happen. Because look, Villa Park, I know, has struggled to fit in disabled fans. And yeah, a lot of that is to do with the fact it's quite an archaic stadium design. You know, it's built traditionally, it wasn't built with wheelchairs in mind. And it does hurt me to even contemplate that the disabled, the accessible season ticket waiting list at Villa must be massive. You know, if God forbid, some, you know, if something happened to me and I need an accessible seat, I know I would have to go on a waiting list, and the experience of going to Villa Park will be different. So hopefully they can find the room, build accessible seating there and platforms. And if that comes at a cost of losing a bit of that tradition, then that's something you have to bear. But I hope with the money back in Villa that they can get the best of both. They don't have to lose their tradition. They can make a massive rounded off stadium in red brick, in mosaic, with that Villa flavour. If they lose that, they lose a lot. But at least if you can get in the fans who deserve to be going, you know, we can't, the stadium layout shouldn't be something that discriminates. So if, as long as you can get in the people who love the club, energy comes from within rather than outside. But I'm pretty glad with how Villa Park looks, so I wouldn't want that kind of knockdown.
Yeah, and the future does look positive under the ownership of Wes and Nassef and Christian as chief executive. I think Aston Villa are going in the right direction, and moving forward with fans, hopefully that will be a positive atmosphere and correlate to the atmospheres you might get in Europe, like you said, and the atmosphere that you experienced with the learner protest and atmosphere during the playoff seasons, the two occasions that we're in the playoffs. And just the atmosphere like that to really get behind the players at Villa Park again would be such a sight to see. And I'm so thankful for you for coming on to share your experiences, James. It's an honour to speak to you, mate. You introduced me to fan media, and it's fantastic to have this conversation.
No, thank you. It's an honour to come on. Liam, I really enjoy what you're doing. So keep it up, and thank you very much for having me on.